Today is the 23rd of the 3rd, 2016. I'm interviewing Bob Cowan. Bob is a retired public servant, and he's going to tell us now about the life and times of the Cowan family. Bob, would you like to start off?
Yes, thank you, Frank. Yes, I've been living here for nearly 13 years. We shifted over from Kinkagate across the road, my wife and I, and then she passed away about this time last year. Well, what about us? Well, Cowan is a Scottish name, and the first Cowan of my lineage came out from Scotland in 1862. He settled in Dunedin for a short time, but by the time he arrived here and he had applied to come here, the town was full of gold diggers from the Australian gold field, because Gabriel's Gully had opened up and they were looking for gold. So he had a wife, pregnant wife, one daughter. He had all his gear. So they got on the coach and they headed out and stayed at Milton. And they were there for the rest of their days. Now, I've often said that they came to New Zealand with several one-off things. One pregnant wife, one daughter, one chest of tools, because he was a bootmaker, and one whiskey still, because Scotsmen in those days, that was their hobby, brewing whiskey. He set up in business in Milton. They had two other kids. The older one was Agnes. My great-grandfather was William Cowan, and the younger one was John Cowan, or they used to refer to him as John Junior. He stayed there, and that was before, about 10 years before the rail went through. Laura and I were passing through Milton about 7 or 8 years ago, and we went into the Historic Society, and they had all the records that they could think of from the town, because at one stage it was quite a big town. So we looked through everything like that, and nowhere could I find my John Cowan listed. So obviously he wasn't very administrative-minded, but you've got to go back a little bit to find out why was he like that. And the reason he was like that, he had already buried a wife and a daughter before they left Scotland and he remarried again. The daughter was about 8 or 9, she was Isabella, and in those days, most Scottish young women, she was called Margaret. So they came out here and he just went into his shell. He was very honest, very good tradesman, and in fact, Robert Hannah from Hannah's and Sons wanted him to go in and be a partner in what he was starting to make shoes in quantity like we have them now.
Just a moment, Bob. Where is Milton?
South of Dunedin.
North of Gore?
Yes, it's halfway between Dunedin and Gore.
Well, it's very close to Hokanui Hills, isn't it?
You're right, extremely close.
So, do you know if the still was ever put into action?
I don't know.
Maybe that's why he was very quiet. He didn't want to advertise.
Well, he used to have peppermints under the counter so that when the customers came in, he'd pop a couple in his mouth and that's all the smell you got. Yeah. But I believe he was quite a reasonable one. But he'd been through the trauma of losing his family, wife and daughter, and one of the many typhoid epidemics. He used to run rife through Scotland in those years.
Yes. Just whereabouts in Scotland did he come from?
Burnt Island.
Where is Burnt Island?
Just out of Edinburgh.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is it an island?
No.
Only the Scots could call a place that isn't an island.
Or the Irish. But no, he was a good law-abiding citizen, like we all are. Well, William the Son, which is my father's father, my grandfather, he took on an apprenticeship of, we call it today, sign writing. But in those days, they not only did the scroll work, but they did the fancy work on the sides of coaches, and he used to do that. And he worked for a 70s apprenticeship crowd in Moray Place in Dunedin, and he was there all his life, and he retired from there after whatever he was. He died at about the age of 78. The old boy that came out with his whiskers still, he was 82 and a bit when he died. Because my brother's greatest ambition, this is the brother that died in March, was to live older than, and this bloke was 82 and 17 days. Well, Bill did that one all right. was 86, 86 and a half. Well, Dad started work with a ship's provador crowd, and then he joined the railways as a 16-year-old, 15, 16-year-old, as a clerical cadet. And he trained at the Dunedin Railway Station, which is rather unique. And he did 35 years before we buried him after his last heart attack. So he was a rowman all his life. Now, in the early parts, and I've got the record here of what he did, he was, how the railways train you for future management, they transfer you to a place like, well, in Dad's case, he went to Waikaya for about 3 months, and then he went down to somewhere else for another 6 months, and so on. So they got all aspects of it, and they got to know when somebody brings a parcel in for such and such, know where to send it to without any problems. When Mum and Dad married, he had exchanged his job with a job in the railway publicity and advertising branch, but he had to pay his own transfer. Well, he was a single man, he didn't have much. Well, at any rate, they went down to Wellington. He had to go to Wellington, and the other bloke at that stage, Dad, was at Waiuk, up near Auckland. And so Dad shifted to Wellington. He got married. Mum and Dad got married. And then they raised a mortgage, bought a house in Johnsonville. Well, like a lot of people, when the Depression hit, he was, all public servants got a 5% reduction, then a 15% reduction, and they couldn't keep up the payments. Now, go on about another 80 years, and Mum was in a retirement home, or a brethren one, right opposite the house that they'd built. That's just how the cookie crumbled. Well, at any rate, Dad was very successful. When he went back on what they call the traffic branch, he was transferred as Chief Clerk Wilson, 50 miles north of Auckland, halfway to Whangarei. We were there 2 years, and then Dad was transferred to Mataroa, which is just south of Narakahu, just north of Taipi. And he was the station master there, but he was also the postmaster. And we were there for 3 years and 9 months. And people say your school days are the best days of your life. Well, I couldn't get away from it quick enough, but I look back on Mataroa, and Mataroa was ideal for my wandering nature. There was a whole group of us 8, 9 and 10 year olds there. We used to get round, they're all farmers' kids. We used to go all around the area.
I was over in Taihape and Mangaweka 3 weeks ago. Now, when you turn right to go towards Wairu, is that where...
You turn into Mataroa Road, it's called. And that used to be wandering all over the place till I got to Mataroa. And the state highway used to turn... You joined it at Spooner's Bluff, which was a cow of a place. Well, they overcome it by putting a main road through that way, and it takes about 6 minutes from the main highway to Mataroa Township.
I know exactly where it is.
The other place I mentioned, Narakahu, that was the next railway station up the line.
Mm.
All it was a crossing point. There was a signal box, two houses that side, one house that side, and two back sheds. No power, no road, no telephone. And so a train would come in from Taihape going north. They'd put him into one back shunt, and then they'd back right back, so that when he started, he gets a bit of a run on before climbing up the hill.
I was reading a book last night by W.W. Stewart on New Zealand trains, and it was talking about Taihape and those little lines and everything.
It's quite a unique area. Between us and Taihape was Bennett's Siding. Bennett's was the sawmill owners, and they'd closed the sawmill before the Second World War. When the crowd that had the rail before they sold it back to the government said they were going to close the Auckland-Wellington expresses, I went over to Mataroa and I photographed the northbound one going through. It just, no stopping it, because it was in a locomotive and about five carriages and a guardsman. And that's where Dad would have had to change the... and pull the signals down and all that sort of stuff.
Was it electric then, or was it...
No, it was
a steamer.
Steam, KAs. Well, at any rate, when we were there, my brother Bill went for a Wellesley College, Parramatta, just south of Auckland, where John Alomu went to, different time, obviously, and he won a scholarship. So he did the second year, halfway through the second year, the Yanks took it over as an R&R. place. So Bill came back and he went to Tai Happy Secondary School. And then Dad got a shift on promotion as senior shift clerk Eltham. What a dump that is. Anyway, we were there for 2 years, and that's where Dad had his big heart attack. And was off for weeks and weeks and weeks. Yeah, that's how they did it in those days. There was one cardiologist, and if you drew a line from New Plymouth through to Napier and down to Wellington, he did all that area. One man. No wonder they didn't get too much in the way of success.
Well, I suppose that's why they only had one, because the rest had died before they could do anything about it.
Well, that would be right. An element of truth. More than an element of truth in it. Well, at any rate, the only one that family that was at school was me. Janice was too young. She was 7 years young. So Bill went up. He would have gone up in 1940. I was 10 that year. Janice was 3. But Janice actually started school before she was 5, because the sole teacher that was there, Ron Marks, had a child about 6 months older, and he was starting school. And he was a very good solo teacher, school worker, because he paired the class, the Primer 1 and 2, worked together, Primer 3 and 4. So Janice, although she couldn't be officially recognised, she went every day, you see, and she did quite well academically, but doesn't do much with it now. Bill finished up as a senior partner with Arthur Young and Company, the public accountants, and his specialty was liquidation and receiverships. And I often, when I was in the training field, used to say, well, you're jolly lucky you got caught up with me, not with my brother. Why?
He'd liquidate you.
He would liquidate. Towards the end of his career with Arthur Young, all of those that are above about 58 got offered to be paid out as if they got to the retirement age, and he decided he didn't. So he then went to the treasurer of Pub Charity. So we did quite well out of Pub Charity. He was allowed to spend how he liked the money that was in the trust account. Not the money, but the interest. Mm. And in fact, I'll be using one tomorrow morning at Pub Charity. They'll tell. Top quality. And that was 43. Dad had his attack. Well, early 44, we were transferred to Palmerston North. Now, in those country schools like Stratford, there were three streams. There was the academic, and they did all the academic things like Latin and French and so on. There was the middle one, which was all dairy science, botany, all those sorts of things. Yeah, and the bottom one was for tradesmen. In other words, metalwork, woodwork, so on, you see. Well, I was put in the middle lot. Well, we transferred in May of 45, back down to Palmerston North. Well, I had no school I could go to, and I was plonked in I had old Scoglin, who was the Minister of Education, not long afterwards. And the only thing I can remember about him, he was very accurate with a little bit of chalk. So on PJ Day, which was the 17th of August, I'd had enough. So I grabbed all my books, got on my bike, and went home, and Mum and Dad were having a cup of tea, and I plonked them on. I've had it. I'm not going back. I can't go. I'm going into town to see what's going on VJ Day. So I went into town and came back, and I thought, I'll get a rocket in the air when I get back. But I didn't. They said, no, what we're going to do, we're going to see if we can go up to Wellsford to stay with the people that we knew up there. He owned a carrying company. And I spent 4 or 5 weeks going out with the drivers, writing out the dockets for Bobby Heard. I didn't get any money, I didn't want any money. And then a note came back to say, well, we think you should come home. We booked you on 227 on such and such a date. So I got the Whangarei to Auckland Express, and then caught the overnight express to Wellington, and then came home. And when I got home, they said, we've decided the best thing for you, actually, is to join the railways as a clerical cadet. And that's how I started. In that first year, I started there in October 45, and in 46 was election year. Well, by that time, I'd done the 3 months in the goods office, and then I'd asked to be transferred across to the other side. And Bill Code, the station master's class, said, well, the only problem with that is you can't operate the telephone exchange there. I said, yes, but I can come in after work every time. Not book the time, but to learn how to use it, which I did. And then one night, it must have been the day before the 1946 election. I answered the telephone, and it was the local area returning officer. And he said, "We've got a problem." I said, "Oh, yes, can I help?" "Well, that's what we're hoping you can do." So the problem was that the deputy returning officers at Shannon were a bit light on voting papers. So I said to him, "Well, look, give us your number and I'll ring you back and see what I can find." So I went down, and I knew there was a train leaving at about 1 a.m. or something. And so I went down and I found the guard. "Oh, yes, that's no problem." So I rang back. I also told them the number to ring in Wellington and what time the train should be there. And I got a lovely little letter, which is no value now. It's only hard copy, to say that I've gone. I just thought I was doing the job.
So how long were you with the railways then? Your father died, didn't he?
No, not until 53. I was only there about 18 months. But you see, the reason that I could fit in so easily, I'd been brought up as a railway kid, and I knew all about it.
Yes, that's right.
Then in 1947, National Airways was expanding. And so what they do, they were calling for clerical staff. Well, there was about eight that was going from the railways, and so I thought, well, I'll see what happens. So I went, and I got a job in the chief inspector's office. I did all the aircraft logbooks. For every aircraft in those days, there was five logbooks. One for the airframe, one for each engine, one for each prop. It was my job to keep all that. And also I used to do the hourly overhaul records. And I had to ensure that in every aircraft there was a certificate of airworthiness for that aircraft. I thought, well, that's a bit silly. If the aircraft prangs, who's going to look?
Well, those were the days. They would be DC-3s
and the
Electras.
Yeah, the little Electras, 10A.
And the Airspeed Oxford, there was a few of those floating around too.
Well, they were RNZ AF1 and the Ansons. On the last day of November in 1946, it must have been, a Oxford came up from Oaxaca, did a photographic job in Napier, and there was on a direct line from Napier back through to Oaxaca. And over the southern end of the Ruahinis, it struck a terrific turbulence, and it just disappeared, just disintegrated.
Was that the one that hit Armstrong Saddle?
Could have been. How they can tell that they never had a chance to pull the chutes or anything like that. It was fairly close to the ground, and the way the aircraft... So all Oxfords were grounded at that point, and they went and checked over them, and then they got rid of them eventually. Now, I enjoyed my time at NAC. We used to get one return flight anywhere in New Zealand as a staff concession free, and anywhere else you wanted to go, half fare. Well, at NAC... My office was off the hangar on Milson Airfield, and that used to be the repair depot for all NAC stuff. So at any rate, I got to know quite a few ex-RNZ AF ones, and that's when I wanted to have a crack at the RNZ AF. And that was quite interesting. As a photographer, what are some of the things I did? I did Tony Freiberg's farewell to Palmerston North, opening of Parliament a couple of times, called out. I got back from lunch one day and there was a telephone message there. And we're picking you up in 10 minutes. So I got the equipment, hopped in the back in the cab, we're out to Rongotai. What had happened is the RNZ were taking delivery of the little de Havilland Devons. Beautiful little aircraft. Mm. Well, the pilot picked this one up, went for a test flight. And as he was coming back across the airfield at a fairly low height, probably about 100 feet or something, he switched from one tank to another tank, which showed it was full, and it was empty. So he was on the ground, and he slid right along, he bent the props back, a bit of stress to the rest of the aircraft.
Mm.
But he said to me when I got there, look, he said, I want those two things photographed, so that's why I'm down here. And so photographed. Another one, I was in the Parku hut at the end of the runway at Oaxaca one night, and the Straits Air Freight Express from Paraparam to
Blenheim,
yeah, just notified them that they'd lost all the hydraulics. And so it was Oaxaca, the longest runway in New Zealand at the time. So they diverted into Oaxaca, and we sat in the crash tent just round the outer side, So he wouldn't see us there waiting to pick him up. Anyway, when he touched down, we followed him as quick as we could. And then we got nearly to the end and he still had a bit of way going, so he spun off and he did a couple of little circuits while he was slowing down. And of course, being a man or two, the ground was very soggy. Well, so what did the crash tender bloke do? Drove off the runway?
That stuck.
Yes, they were a very smart little plane. They used to use them for ferrying VIPs, didn't they?
Oh, yes. I went on one from Whanganui down to Ohakia. And, of course, the blokes in the hangar all looking, wonder who's going to get in. And I hopped out, and another photographer hopped out.
Because were you in uniform?
Oh, yes.
Yes, of course, you'd have to be.
Well, Easter time is when you go out of your khakis permanently and into the blues. The other one is you go in October, you change into uniform. I used to do a lot of what they call the Army Co-op. We were given the coordinates where they were going to be all nicely camouflaged. We had to find them, photograph them, and drop the prints back later. But what actually happens is the average soldier is told they're not to ever look at an aircraft. Because one bloke, he was a Maori bloke, pokes his head out. You can see him there, and you can see a whole lot there.
It's just like putting a dot on the map, isn't it?
Didn't do very much aerial mapping. It's sort of gone now. Camera gunning we did a lot of, because the armed services worked out years ago that if you give a bloke in a fighter aircraft and put live ammunition in and tell him to go and have a dogfight, you know, you lose a few aircraft. And we did a lot of that. And while I was there, I was away on leave one day, and they were looking to send several people to AEWS, the Army Education Welfare, to get a protectionist ticket. So, and I think they thought, oh, Cowan's away, we'll send him. Well, I was delighted, because I made a lot of money from that. What I did when I was latter years here, I was on the organising committee of the NZIM, and I did a deal with them that you do all the hard work and it will split the profit, the net profit, 50-50. And that is where I was a whisker away from a military funeral.
For yourself or for someone else?
For me. Oh, yes, that's the closest I've ever been. Well, we had a group of new pilots come in and they were learning the skills of the job, you see. And this bloke, who I knew quite well, said, hey, Bob, have a come in the back seat of a harbour to woo with me. I'm on drogue towing. I said, well, as much as I'd like to, I've got too much work stacked up. So at any rate, off he went and finished his drogue towing, did a very good job. But one thing he didn't do very well, he decided to do a victory loop. And he dropped his wing down and cartwheeled into some macro carver. I could have been on that aircraft.
Yeah, so many times that's how it ended, wasn't it?
Yeah. I had actually been in, when I do an Army Corps job up on the peninsula from Helensville there, I was just getting myself all straight again, because when you're photographing at Harvard, you loosen up your straps, you pump the seat up high, then swing around, then you've got a sort of a triangle you can photograph. Well, I was getting back, I'd done my job, and I was getting back, and all of a sudden the whole horizon goes around. And the voice says to me, oh, oops, sorry, I forgot you were there. I said, I'm still here. And we did lots of that sort of stuff. Well, I took my discharge and I went back to Wellington. I walked and knocked on doors for the next week to see if there's any good photographic job. Because naively I thought, well, I've got good qualifications, I'm well experienced, there should be no trouble in getting a job. Well, they didn't want me. So at any rate, I thought, well, I'd better go back and do administration, and that's when I went to the office manager of Fisheries Research Authority, Marine Department. I was there for a couple of years, and then I moved on up to the War Commission Wellington, which was much better. My philosophy was, if I don't like the job, move on. And then when you get to the next job, you learn all you can about it, then you can ask your boss certain questions. If he doesn't know the answer, well, you know you're okay. Well, it was when I was at the Fisheries Laboratory, I got married to Helen, and then 13 months later, was when she died. Now, I went up to we had a daughter, and when the daughter was 9 days old, I went up to see Helen, and we were talking about the following week when I was going to call for her and the baby and leave her with her mother in Kundala. Well, everything seemed above board and normal. Then I went home, and there was a telephone message for me to come back straight away. They wanted to talk to me. Well, I went back, and someone told me she got out of bed probably before I got off the side, and a blood clot shifted. Because when your heart stops, you do. So here I was, a 28-year-old man, been in a very dominant male's situation before, no experience with babies. Well, she was adopted out. She actually came up to Hawke's Bay here, and she was adopted into a bloke, King, who had an orchard down near the Flash, the Navy Golf Course, just down the road from there. And then they sold that, and he took over the license for the Green Meadows Hotel, and she took over the license for the Otani Hotel. And then, I don't know what happened there. Well, we managed to get a card in her box on her 30th birthday, and got her to ring us, and my sister went down and made contact, because we were in Hastings. She was in Wellington. And she was quite a bit of the family for the next 20 years. And all of a sudden, don't want to know about her. Well, I've left a message on her answer phone, on her mobile phone, written her a letter, nothing.
Our daughter we adopted, and Melissa found her birth mother, met her, and she met all her uncles and cousins and so forth. But then, all of a sudden, that was it. She didn't go back to see her birth mother again.
Well, that would be right.
It's hard to understand when it's not you it's happening to.
Yes, that's quite right. Well, at any rate, this is where the first digression. Janice is coming over from Melbourne, my sister.
Yes, your youngest sister.
Yeah, well, she's a poor old girl. She's 78. Anyway, we're going to call in. We're going to have a trip of nostalgia. We're going to go and spend a couple of nights in each place where we live. Well, we've got to go through Whanganui, and that's where Linda is.
Mm.
And we will knock on the door. She can't refuse.
At any rate,
I've passed the age of worrying about her.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. When I was at the War Commission, we decided we'd like to come up to Hawke's Bay. So his office manager at Potonga County Council, Waipakarau Engineering Department, came up and I applied for the job and got it. When I was leaving there, Sam Coles, the county engineer, he said, "Can you tell me one thing, please?" I said, "Oh, what do you like?" He said, "I was very impressed. You walked in the door with a nicely pressed suit, a collar and tie, clean shoes, everything, when you've been working all day, then travelling." "Quite simple, Mr. Coles. I had it on the back seat, and we come and found out where you were, and we went back, I changed, and come here." When we were at the Potonga County Council, I was envisaging, I liked the county because it was, we were dealing with country folk, and I thought, I'll work up to become a county clerk one day. Well, Lorna's dad died suddenly, so the office manager for APAC applied for it and got the job. And what an unusual bloke the manager for APAC was. He had not a thing on the desk, and Bill Peters, who was the factory manager, had a whole heap of stuff. I went in the bill one day, he got a receipt for such. "Oh, here it is," he said. He knew where everything was, yeah.
Who was the manager those days?
Alec Logan. And when Fropax packed up, he got a job selling small goods out of Timona. Bill went over there as the safety man. Bill was a nice bloke. Old Alec wasn't so nice. Well, I went and had an argument with him. I just ignored him. But we were taken over by Unilever. And then I became assistant planning manager in the engineering costing department. And then I left there and then went to industrial training service. My area was quite a big one. I was responsible from right up to Tierra Row down to Dannevirke. I didn't work in Tierra Row, but I worked in Dannevirke. It was one of the things that old Roger Douglas reckoned they weren't making enough money. So we got the job. But I'd been going to Gisborne Refrigerating Company for quite a few years. I was walking down the chain one day with Wally Varley and I said, "Hey Wally, do you reckon I've made any difference coming to you?" He said, "Well, if you can think of 6 to 8% improvement in productivity." Then our son Marshall was getting a bit toey. Laura was the sort of person that always thought she should be able to have a good discussion with our kids. They would then behave. Well, sometimes you've got to have a clip over the ear, don't you?
You've got to establish some guidelines.
Yeah, right. Well, Lorna hadn't done that, you see. So I'd get back from Gisborne, and I'd say, well, how's Marshall been? Oh, he's been a real so-and-so. Do you want me to talk to him? No. So he was a real so-and-so. He's not too bad now. Well, then I decided, when I went down to Wellington, I got transferred to Wellington, and I worked in there for about 3 months before coming back. I applied for the job of Management Services Officer, Hawke's Bay Hospital Board. This was investigating problems in many departments. CSSD, X-ray, engineering, safety scheme, disposal of contaminated sharps and flats.
That's an interesting term.
Yeah, well, that's what they refer to them as. And what they did, when I went there, they would get the large, empty coffee tins, solder up the top, put a slot in it. They all went in there. Yeah. And then they went to the dump, which they, well, when I got there, we changed it. There's a special container you can get, and they used to be destroyed through the incinerator down at the port. But one thing I'd say about that particular job, I was working in five freezing works at one time, and that just about made me a vegetarian. I thought it was a bit rude. Here was a poor little sheep to get his throat cut, and 20 minutes later is in the chiller, ready to go.
Yet those men up there were so hard that they didn't even think. Some of them revelled in it.
Yeah, that's quite right. But I think the worst part of the lot was the bloke that used to put the chain around the leg of the cattle beast. He was always ready to get up the... Not for me, thank you. In 1993, I was appointed archivist who operates in catalogue administration records from 67 to 1993. My full-time work was 49 years and 10 months. Doing the archives, I used to take them to the top floor in the Hastings. It was empty then, you see. And I was able to catalogue something like about 700 boxes, and I got rid of about 5,000. The last three chief executives were real paper men. Instead of writing on one piece of paper, they'd take about six. And one of the first things you do when you do a job like that, you get all the confidential ones first. You read them. Well, and you say to yourself, now, what was confidential about that? I knew that at any rate.
So, Bob, those archives would still be there, wouldn't they?
They were set up in the bulk store in Onikawa, and they should still be there.
It's interesting that you worked for 49 years, 10 months. How come you didn't do the 50?
Because they told me that that's when you're leaving. Now, other employment. I got home from school once off the train, and Dad was there to meet me. He said, oh, so-and-so at the cinema, he's got the ice cream concessions. I want somebody to sell ice cream at interval. I said, I'll see you later, Dad. And I went in. And he had a tray. I think there was 24 ice creams. Once they were finished, gone. And I would come home with two bob in my pocket and have seen the pictures. I was supposed to see the picture from the front row stall. So as soon as the light went down, I came back.
See, it's interesting there, other things, delivering telegrams and share milking one cow owned by Bill. It's little things. There were no other alternatives to make any money, was there? You had to do what was available.
Well, the telegrams at Christmas, that was on my bike. You got a certain rate and that was it. But one of the things I missed to say at Bill's eulogy in Wellington is that as soon as we got to Eltham, Bill wanted to be in business. He was 15, 2 years older, and that's what it was. He bought a cow. He also bought a small separator and a small churn. We got all the gear, yeah. And his job in the morning, he'd milk it and take it down, and he'd tether it where the county engineer would say, and he'd tell me at school, and I'd go down and get the oath. Now, delivering telegrams at Christmas, they had to get special permission to employ me because I was 13. So at any rate, they did, and we had no problems. But Bill had this desire to be in business. What do you do in Taranaki if you want to go into business?
You get a
buy
cow.
She was a placid old thing, a little bit deformed, but as quiet and gentle as you could wish for them. And I can still know how to milk. Now, 65, I became a director of the Hawke's Bay Consumers Co-op. There was 9 supermarkets, and we were the first to introduce discounting. 71 to 91, sub-enumerative for 5 yearly censuses. The first one I was on was at Tower, 1971. Marshall was about 10 or 11, and I took him round when I went to pick all the things up. Boy, did I work him hard. He still talks about it. Now, I did parliamentary elections, deputy DRO, for charge of booths. Most times Lorna was my poor clerk, and most times we were in the Salvation Army in town. And I did the same for the Hastings City Council. And the AMP show Hastings, I was, for 3 years there, I was the cashier. And the first year, I got a balance, and I said to Arnold, the secretary, I said, I saw balance. He said, how'd you do that? He said, nobody else has done.
Was that Arnold Baker?
No, he's a public accountant. Now, photographic concessions, toy shop Hastings, photographing children and Father Christmas. I would employ a girl to start off with, a young one, and then I'd take it over myself. And was so geared that the grandma that brought the kids in would have to come back 3 times, their prints. That was quite handy. 65 and 70, I just ran a part-time photographic business, mainly preschoolers and weddings. Preschoolers are delightful because they haven't learned to be cheeky. Now, that was, I'll enjoy that. Weddings, I reckon I've done about 120 weddings over the years. 1961, when I first got married to Lorna, and 1970, when we were down there for 12 months, I worked for Robert's Photography. He was in Pararua. Now, the bloke you employ at a wedding, some such function, who is not the photographer, are always referred to as the stringer.
That's a term I've never heard of.
Mainly on Saturdays. In Wellington there, one day I did 2 weddings, one in the morning and one in the afternoon.
That's a big job, doing 2
and
weddings.
And I was buggered at the end. I did the first Maori wedding in St Paul's Cathedral in Wellington. And 70 to 93. When I got back from Wellington, they asked me to join the local Institute of Management, and then they gave me the job as chairman of the subcommittee for education. So it was my responsibility to find the tutors. Well, 2 of them had left. One had gone to Nelson and the other one had gone to Dunedin, I think. So I thought, well, I've never done it before. I'll have a go. And I did it right through to 1993.
Did you really? What were you tutoring?
Anything for the Institute of Management.
Because you had that broad background, didn't
you? Oh, yes.
And you were hands-on. You weren't someone doing it out of a manual.
No. Well, what they liked, my style, was discussion groups. And they're only small classes, 10 or 12 at the outside. Oh, no, I thoroughly enjoyed that. Mm. And it was well paid, too. And I did examination supervisor, school certificate, and bursary, and NCEA. I only gave up about 2 years ago, NCEA down here at Havelock High. The problem with that was that the font that they used on the papers was getting a bit small, and that was it.
Now, sports. Did you play any sports?
Yes,
during your life, what did you play?
I played rugby, but my position on the field was left, right, outside.
Was this because you were disorientated, or or hadn't they told you your position, so you just played everywhere?
Well, no, it's a little bit more
obscure than that.
At the age of 9, my mother started me on Highland dancing. She thought I might help me to grow, because there was plenty of photographs on the computer there. If Bill had put his arm out like that, I could walk under it. There's only 2 years difference. Well, at any rate, I won about 5 medals and money. I must have been all right at it. Well, at any rate, I bumped my leg on the gate at the front, and I came up like Mount Egmont. So in the end, we went to the doctor in Tai Happy, and the last time I went to him, he said to Mum and Dad, because he was also the surgeon superintendent from the hospital, he said, I'm going to have to operate. So he rang up there, and I went straight in. I was operated on, and he told Mum and Dad afterwards he thought he might have to amputate my leg. Well, fortunately, they didn't.
Did you get a bug in it?
I don't know how or whatever.
No, because you were too young to probably even think about it. Well, that's good. They're both yours still, aren't they?
Yes.
So did you carry on playing rugby after that?
In the same position. No. The doctor said no contact sports and no Highland dancing.
Sure.
I think I've still got the scars of about here.
And so did you play any sports later in life?
Oh, I used to do a lot of tramping in the Tararuas. No, I think when you look at what I've done, most of my jobs have been solo operators. So therefore, in sport, I'm better solo operating.
Oh, did you tramp as part of a tramping club?
No.
Just solo tramping?
Well, not solo. There's three of them. Other blokes. One's died of cancer not so long ago. And the other one, he's probably dead by now too. He was going downhill rapidly.
Well, it must have been good for you to go tramping because all of your jobs were indoors, using your head and not your body.
Yeah. Yes, I'm basically more of an outdoor person. I prefer being outdoors. You see, the week before last, I went down on my buggy down to the village five times.
Well, you know, looking down here, there's FROPAX, Potongata County Council, Wool Commission, Fisheries, National Air. Of course, you had a pull to the outdoors all the time.
Yes,
AMP shows, the City Council, parliamentary elections. Well, that's a plus or not. Now, you mentioned Marshall.
Yeah.
Your son.
He's the one that's the minister of the Church of Christ in Welford.
What age would he be today?
53.
And grandchildren?
Two. One is at Riversdale, just out of Gore, and the other one is in Melbourne. The one in Melbourne's got a Bachelor of Music, and his two jobs are he manages a top-line bar in some pub in Melbourne, which I'm going to see it when I'm over there next. And he also plays gigs around the town. So
was your family musical?
No. The only band Dad was ever in was the band around his hat.
Now, also, at some stage or other, you became interested in the Knowledge Bank. Were you part of the genealogy group?
No. It was Nicky Beattie that said to me, it's an open day, better come out for the open day. It's in February, I think it was. And I did. That was the start of it.
You know, I've opened the door to the most interesting thing I've ever done in my life. You didn't have any daughters, just had the one.
Yeah.
Nicky encouraged you to go.
Just for the open day. And I decided there and there. Because three times up to date, I've been involved in archive. Now, the first time, I broke a finger, so I couldn't work in any of the processing rooms in the RNZAF. So I did all the archives from 1926 up until that particular year, which was about 1954. And I made certain some of mine were in there. The second one was our church, which is the Baptist Church in Hastings. It was coming up to 100 years. And I was asked if I could archive all the records they've got. Well, there was four multi-wall bags in a room there. So I brought them home and tipped them in the middle of the garage. And, oh, Lord, I said, what's that? I said, that's your church. So I did those. And the third one was at the hospital. I was appointed archivist then, and I worked for about 2 years on it, two and a half years. And I was only thinking the other day that if Bill knew what I'd done with these 25,000, he would be quite delighted, because we're a family that looks to our history.
It was really a wonderful organisation. It can be quite addictive.
Yes, very much so. Janice over in Melbourne has been doing family history for about 30 years. Bill paid for it. She did it, and I got the results. You couldn't work anything better than that.
That's absolutely right. Can you think of anything else that we may have missed out on?
Well, you've been here an hour and a half for nearly 50 years.
Yes, we haven't wasted any time, and it's all been in the right order too.
Well, I've made these about, five years ago.
But if you find you remember something else you think's quite important, we can always do it as an addendum and tack it on the end of this.
Well, there is a cassette in there already, given to him, so you can have a listen to that and see what I... My grandmother was a little, sprightly little, quiet lady, and she died when she was about 76 or so. Well, when she came out to New Zealand from England, and she had been educated in the secondary school by a, they called a maiden aunt in those days. He came here and then died in the 1918 troubles when we had the flu going around. But at any rate, Grandma was a, she was a nice old lady, even when she was younger, but she was engaged to a bloke, New Zealander, who went off to the Boer War. And word came that he was injured and missing. So she decided, oh, well, that's a profit there. I've got the ring. I can't give back to him. So she went and married another bloke, and she had a couple of kids. And he died about, well, she was married to him about 20 years, and he was quite a bit older. Then one day, the original bloke turned up on the doorstep. Well, in the intervening period, he had actually repatriated back to Australia, and he'd a job there, and he had a wife, and he had a family. But he called him and saw us, you see. Yeah.
That happened actually quite a lot in that era.
Well, in this case, she had not left him. He had left her.
Well, you know, communication took so long.
I think modern communications, as when the Yanks went into Mogadishu a few years ago, when they got off their boats on the beach, they run them up onto the beach, the TV cameras were there photographing them coming off.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's been most interesting hearing the story of your life. And as I said, if you have any things that you remember, we can always do it as an addendum. So thank you very much.
Thank you.